Welcome back to the Legal Digest podcast with your host, Natalie. And today I'm joined by Bunmi, founder of the Fashion Law Edit, an award-nominated platform, which is dedicated to exploring the connection between the legal and business side of the fashion industry. Today, we're going to be discussing the issues that affect lawyers in the fashion industry, ESG, and how businesses are affected by the challenges in the current financial climate. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Natalie.
As a London-based platform connecting legal professionals with the fashion industry, can you tell us how you started the Fashion Law Edit? What was the original idea behind it and how has it changed since the beginning?
So I started the Fashion Law Edit back in 2016. So I was a second year law student and, you know, I loved law, obviously, but I also had a real interest in fashion. So I would, you know, go to lots of, you know, networking events and panel discussions, whether to do with law or fashion. And it just so happened that in 2016, probably about March 2016, I went to a fashion event. And during like the networking, I spoke to the organizers and was just speaking about, you know, obviously my interests. And they were like, oh, like, you know, why don't you start a online platform, like a blog focusing on fashion law? You know, so obviously that combines, you know, my legal side and as well as, you know, my fashion side as well. So I went back home, done lots of research and actually found out actually fashion law is a legal area. It's really, really massive in the States. You've got stuff like, you know, the Fashion Law Institute, you've got fashion law taken as a degree within modules. You've got law firms that are solely to do with fashion law, or they've got like a fashion law department. So it's very, very massive in the States, but in the UK there is little to no information. I remember doing like research and literally going on Google, all the search results popped up were tailored to, you know, stuff in America and what was going on there. So that kind of got me thinking about, like, obviously there's a gap in the market, in the legal market, and no one's really doing anything to do with fashion law. Don't get me wrong, there are still law firms, very, very small law firms who do fashion law within like a department sense, or there is online platforms like Fashion Law and Business that I came across, you know, that obviously focus on fashion law, but it wasn't on a grand scale. So I kind of thought, well, okay, let me take this on board, kind of create my own opportunity. So I started out with a name, which was originally called Fashion Law Chronicles, before rebrand last year. Got a logo, went on Squarespace, done a quick site, and yeah, just started blogging. Very, very quickly, actually, it amassed a lot of numbers. So I started getting requests globally for people to start writing for the site, which I was like, yeah, sure. You know, as long, you know, it's an opportunity and I'm happy for people to, you know, come and have a place to share, you know, their thoughts on what's going on in fashion law. So that writing community kind of grew. And then before you know it, I was a finalist in the UK Blog Awards 2017.
Wow.
£500 at my previous university's entrepreneurial competition. And then in 2017, I had my first ever event in collaboration with a law firm talking about the sustainability in fashion law. 2021, had the second event, but this time it was virtual because of obviously the pandemic, which was in celebration of International Women's Day. So it was to do with women in fashion law. And July 2022, just had my third panel event, which was focused on influencers and content creators and, you know, how they can, you know, legally make sure, you know, that they're conducting business well to do with contracts and agreements. So it kind of went from, I guess, a hobby to kind of something that grew overnight, and to the point where now last year during a rebrand, I kind of decided, you know, to turn it into a consultancy business. So offering, you know, services all those within the fashion industry, just due to, you know, I get lots of emails or messages saying, you know, do you do this? Do you do that? And I would obviously have to tell them, you know, obviously it was just a blogging platform to start off with, so I don't actually offer those services. So the next step is now to turn it into a legal consultancy to be able to, you know, bridge the gap between fashion law and business. Yes. But my main aim is UK is to merge legal professionals with those in the fashion industry, because I feel like both sides could really use each other, and just making law creative affordable and accessible for all, basically. So yeah,
wow, that's amazing. It's really grown from like 2016 from your idea to now moving to legal consultancy. So for anybody who's like kind of, you know, thinking they've got an idea, and how do you turn something like an idea into a company like that, where you're actually working with brands and creative people? How easy is it?
I mean, it's not easy, because I've been doing this for the past 6 years by myself, so I've never actually had like a team or like a co-founder sort of thing. So it's been very, very hard, you know, to juggle studying or working full time as well as this. And even back in 2018, when I started my bar course part time whilst working full time, I made the decision to put the fashion law edit on pause temporarily, because it became quite apparent that, you know, since I don't have someone to pass this on and continue the work, you know, I can't juggle this as much, you know, alongside everything else. But I would just say go for it. Start somewhere. You do have to start somewhere. So even if it's just, you know, creating a logo or a website, start from somewhere. A lot of the things that I've been able to happen simply by sending people an email or a message on LinkedIn, and you'll be very, very surprised to find out just how much people want to help, because either they share that same ethos with you or the same passion with you. So I would just say start from where you are, because obviously if you don't start, you're never going to get anywhere. But also don't be afraid to reach out to people in any social media platform as well, because that's where majority of like my assistance has come from, in terms of, you know, even like the events I've put on as well, as just reaching out to people and seeing if, you know, they wouldn't mind sharing their knowledge or expertise to other people who would like to get into this field. So yeah.
And then thinking about, I guess, fashion lawyers, what sort of legal issues would they usually be dealing with in their day-to-day work? Because I think it's quite an undiscovered area of law. People don't normally think about specializing in that area, but clearly there's a huge amount of work that goes into you know, what goes behind these fashion houses and all these big brands. So what kind of work do they get involved in?
So I think a lot of it is commercial based. So you've got things to do with contracts, you've got things to do with intellectual property, so trademarking, registering a business, copywriting, design patents. So a lot of it is commercially focused. However, I would say fashion law pretty much encompasses all areas of law. So it's not one defined area that you'd be doing. So you'd be touching upon like employment law, immigration law. You'd be touching upon things to do with environmental law. So it's literally so many different areas of law being tied up together. So a fashion lawyer may on one day do things to do with trademarking or copywriting, and another day do things to do with immigration, or another day do things to do with environmental law. So no one day is the same. So I think that's one of the special things about it, is it's so, so diverse, to the point where, you know, I've had people say, for example, how can I get into fashion law if I'm doing X, Y, and Z? And I was like, the very thing that you're doing, in fact, is to do with fashion law. So if you continue doing what you're doing, and obviously, you know, getting that experience or commercial awareness, you can definitely merge yourself into fashion law, because it's just that diverse. There isn't like even like a proper legal definition to do with fashion law, because it's still an emerging area. Even though in the US it's been around for a long time, but in the UK we're still getting to grips with it. But yeah, it's a very, very diverse area of law. So fashion lawyers do a broad range of work.
Yeah, and I think the culture in the fashion industry is known to be quite tough to get into, even as someone who wants to maybe be a designer or even from a creative side. So what difficulties do you think law students interested in becoming a fashion lawyer might encounter?
I would say from a UK's perspective, and especially when back in 2016, I was even as a law student finding out about fashion law, I would say for us right now is the lack of resources compared to our US counterparts. So because it's still an emerging area of law in the UK, there isn't a lot of UK centered resources that we can, look into and, use that to assist our career progression. There's only so much you can take the US resources into, helping you find out. But at the end of the day, it's two different jurisdictions. So, you can't apply US law into the UK law because that's just not obviously how our system works. So I think for law students, it's a case of at the moment just finding out what UK related resources are out there that they could, consult. Like I did say before, there are law firms that obviously, do things to do with legal work in the fashion sense, or they actually have a dedicated fashion law department. But again, in terms of how well known and exposed they are, I think it's something that kind of, maybe for law students, they're not aware of. Again, blogging platforms such as like the Fashion Law Edit that I've got, or Fashion Law and Business, or Fashion London, who are doing, amazing work. But again, in comparison to what's in the US, it's just not a lot. So I think one of the things that, law students probably are finding hard is what to do, like who to consult in terms of how to get into fashion law, things to do with work experience, what could you do to, just help yourself get into fashion law. And in fact, I touched upon that in the Women in Fashion Law event that I had last year, where we spoke to, US lawyers and UK lawyers about, how to create a fashion law career as a law student. And one of the things we really stressed upon is commercial awareness. Once you're able to have that in the bud, and you're even attending things to do with fashion events, so it doesn't necessarily have to do with law, but making sure you're in the spaces of those who are in the fashion industry or the fashion business, and making sure you're able to understand the struggles and the issues that are happening in that industry, and then applying, your legal knowledge in that respect will also help you in, just getting up to speed in terms of what's happening in both industries. So unfortunately, we are quite behind in the UK. But I would say commercial awareness is probably your best bet as a law student, just to be able to merge those two areas together.
And then I guess moving on now to the challenges that the fashion industry have faced over the, several crises that we've had. So the expectations, risk appetite, and the financial forecast in business has changed since the start of the pandemic. So how do you feel that the fashion industry has coped with such changes more generally? But I'm also thinking about things like the way that we work, which might not work in the fashion industry. ESG targets, and the cost of shipping and production and shortage of workers. So those kind of things, like how do you think they're coping with those?
I think, as for example, remote working just wasn't something that was well adopted. I mean, obviously, depending on the industry that you were working in, some people did have that flexibility to remote working. But obviously, when we had the pandemic, everything was pretty much forced into working from home. And I think that kind of revolutionized, the way we see work, irrespective of what industry you're in. But just making it seem like, right, okay, what I was doing on a 9-to-5 basis pre-pandemic, actually, I could do that at home as well. I think with the fashion industry, it's quite different. Obviously, because of the type of industry it is, it's a lot hands-on, a lot fully on, depending on, again, what sub-areas you're working in. But I think the Business of Fashion, they did a report comparing, the percentage of employees that were working prior to the pandemic at home, and I think it was something like 47 or 48% said, that they were working remotely from home, and then obviously comparing it to, now in terms of after the pandemic, it's a lot higher than that. I think if you are a creative, and even just looking at the mindset, in terms of if you're creative, you'd probably find it a bit helpful to work remotely. Especially if you're someone that's introverted, not wanting to, have that attention and being able to work on your creative side in an environment that's more suited to you. I think one of the struggles that the fashion industry is having, as well as other industries, is more so to do with performance. Are you able to meet targets in the same way that you would work in an office environment? And just making sure that, you know, those targets don't slip up, the performances don't slip up. So I think in the fashion industry, it's quite hard to measure that because, like I said, it's a very full-on creative industry. So what would work for, I don't know, the legal industry, remote working will not necessarily work for those in the fashion industry. So at the moment, I think we're still doing it trial error, but I think at the moment everyone's kind of realized actually remote working is going really well and we can do this. I think what's also helped as well is in terms of the advance in technology. So in aiding remote working, you've got things to do with, you know, Zoom, for example, you've got Microsoft Teams, so you're able to still collaborate using these devices, but it's done remotely. I think that's really, really helped as well. But I think with a lot of issues in terms of, you know, making sure certain areas aren't disrupted. I mean, unfortunately, we've got the financial crisis, which obviously hasn't helped anyone. So it's like kind of these struggles, you know, we've just left the EU, we've had a pandemic, we're kind of, you know, getting back onto our feet, but we've just had a financial crisis.
Yeah.
It's across the board, it's really, really hard to navigate. But there are been progresses that have been made. So it's just, you know, maintaining that and seeing, you know, if we can, you know, lead on from that.
Yeah. A very challenging time, I think, for all businesses, especially creative industries as well. And then I think turning more specifically now to environmental and sustainability initiatives, because that's been quite a hot topic for all businesses. And now that we've got COP27, which is starting this week, I believe, it's often quoted in connection with the fashion industry. So can fashion brands truly become fully sustainable? And how can buyers be confident that brands are not greenwashing?
I think at this moment in time, it's very hard to fully put your trust in fashion brands when it comes to the environmental crisis. And greenwashing, because like you said, you know, sustainability is often thrown out there and, you know, everyone wants to make sure their brands, or they're seeing that their brands are being sustainable. But the fact of the reality is, unfortunately, we've still got a long way to go. For example, I think it was during the summer and H&M was actually found out to, you know, be greenwashing. They weren't being truthful to their consumers. I think there was a report done by Quartz, and they basically found that H&M was doing like a scorecard system, in that, you know, they were basically telling their consumers, you know, that they were doing X to, you know, make sure that they were seen as environmentally friendly, when in reality, actually, that's not what they were doing. And as a consequence, it's now kind of, you know, in terms of the trust that consumers have put into these brands, it's kind of, you know, been slipped away. I mean, H&M don't have that scorecard system anymore, but a fact of reality is that if brands continue to behave in this way and not being transparent and truthful to their consumers, we're never really going to get on top of, you know, the environmental crisis and sustainability and, you know, greenwashing. So I think we've still got a long way to go. We fully need to be transparent across the board. And I feel like that's the only way that we can actually tackle these issues, is full transparency. And I mean, obviously, it's different for fashion brands, because obviously they're having to think about, you know, the financial implications. They're a business. Yep. At the end of the business is always, whether we like it, going to always come on top for them. But I wonder sometimes if at what cost is business going to come on top for them? When you're dealing with things like the environmental crisis, at some point, you know, we have to have a balance, or actually have to prioritize things, which is including the environment. So I think full transparency needs to really happen for us to actually tackle these issues.
Yeah, and I think a big part of people buying things from brands is that there has to be this element of trust, and people base that on how well you're protecting the environment. What actually are you doing as part of that? So I think it's definitely going to change, I guess, the way that how people shop now. So yeah, it's definitely, you know, a hot topic. And in 2017, it was estimated that the fashion industry made up 1.7% of UK GDP. So how has that changed since we left the EU, and how has it, how has Brexit impacted the fashion industry as a whole, and the work that fashion lawyers focus on?
Right, so we left the EU, I think, in January 2021, which was way, way after we had obviously originally done the referendum, and obviously, you know, pandemic, which kind of, you know, became the forefront of discussion, putting that out, and then Brexit. I think the fashion industry, prior to actually us, you know, leaving the EU, there was a lot of questions in terms of, you know, how we do things, how is the financial aspect going to, you know, come into play, things to do with, you know, trading services and goods, how is that all going to happen? And now that we've left, it has been really, really hard, just seeing how, you know, these businesses have been, you know, doing their business and how they're able to, you know, continue on. And it hasn't been smooth sailing, especially with, you know, the new systems, for example. You know, you don't have that same protection that you would have had if we were in the EU, for example. I think it's very hard to see that we're coming out of it. I feel like we're still in the midst of things, especially now we've got the financial crisis to add on top of things as well. But I do think these brands and the business insiders within the fashion are doing the best that they can to make, you know, life after, you know, Brexit work for them. Obviously, this has had a negative impact in some respects in terms of, you know, how we do goods and services, and also as consumers, what's available to us as well. And there's had to be a lot of cutback in terms of manufacturing goods, for example. So, you know, a lot of the way we manufacture things is through China, but having come out of the EU, that's obviously proved a bit difficult, you know, in terms of everyone trying to find like a manufacturer supplier, because everyone's going to the same places, or there is a lack of resources out there because of we've come out of the EU. So I think there's still a lot of groundwork that needs to be done, but it is slowly moving towards a place where actually, okay, you know, we can continue to do business, obviously in a different way than we did when we were in the UK, EU, but it is slowly coming up there. And then with fashion lawyers, again, like I said at the beginning, I mean, already they're dealing with a diverse area of work. But now that we've come in the EU, so a lot of their things will be to do with, I guess, environmental law, trademarking, counterfeiting, manufacturing sorts of things. Immigration, for example, because you've even got things to do with workers. Coming out of the EU didn't just affect, you know, fashion brands in itself, it actually affected workers as well, especially, you know, like factory workers as well. So it's had a ripple effect in many different aspects within the fashion industry. And it's a case of now, moreover, we're having to find our footing into everything and making it work for us outside of the EU.
Yeah, I think it's definitely like starting from scratch again in some ways, because it's, as you said, it affects everything, workers, cost, absolutely in every way that we used to operate. So it's a huge change, and I think it's going to take a long time to adjust to that. And, you know, as you said, we're still in the midst of it. We haven't really seen the full effects of this, so we don't know, I guess, how the landscape will change. But as businesses usually do, they always seem to adapt to whatever crisis is happening at the time. So we'll see kind of how, what the drivers will be in the next, I guess, 5-10 years. And with the, I think, the shortage of workers as well, and the emerging talent being Gen Z, that's also changing the mindset of the way that we, how we operate and how we do things. But thanks so much for joining me today. That brings us to the end of the episode. We will put the details of the Fashion Law Edit in this episode's description. Don't forget to leave a rating and a review if you enjoyed this episode. And if you have any questions, you can reach out to us via email or on social media.